Following are comments on Thomas Kidd's The Spanish Tragedy, Act 3. My guilty soul submits me to thy doom. A messenger arrives at the Portuguese court and exposes Velupo's sordid lie about Alejandro. In Act 3, Scene 1, Velupo's attempt to cast blame on Alejandro for allegedly killing Balthazar comes to naught when a messenger shows up at court, informing everyone that the young prince is alive. As in, not dead. Well, who could have predicted that? Velupo now appears like just the stupid fellow he really is. His scheme depended on nobody finding out that a prominent man, whom he claims was killed, wasn't in fact killed. So what's the point of this subplot? Velupo identifies his motive as, quote-unquote, reward and hope to be preferred. Line 95. All he can say when caught is, quote-unquote, my guilty soul submits me to thy doom. Line 93. The whole affair reflects poorly on the King of Spain, too, since he accepted Velupo's accusation without the slightest hesitation. And yet these are people who have no problem torturing others because, well, getting to the truth is just that important. One last function for this ridiculous subplot is to drag down the conspiratorial actions of Lorenzo and Balthazar. In Kidd's work, we witness alternating scenes from serious to comic and back, serving to take down the high-status agents. Something Shakespeare may have picked up from Thomas Kidd. Hieronymo, beware, thou art betrayed. Bellimperia sends Hieronymo a letter identifying his son's killers, but he fears that he is being set up. In Act 3, Scene 2, Hieronymo complains in Petrarchan lines about his terrible dreams, which he renders for us with Dantean precision. He seems halfway to madness by this point, even though he's perfectly lucid about what's happening to him. Then comes Bellimperia's letter, which apparently drops down from where she's being held captive and practically falls into his hands. Bellimperia's letter explains in no uncertain terms who killed his dear son Horatio, but at present, Hieronymo fears that the powerful nobles are colluding with one another to entrap him in some treasonous plot. For that reason, he refuses to believe the claims that Bellimperia has made, saying to himself, Hieronymo, beware, thou art betrayed, and to entrap thy life this train is laid. Lines 37 through 38. If Bellimperia knew, she would no doubt feel like Cassandra, doomed to know what's what, and never to be believed. But in truth, Hieronymo, lawman that he is, means to treat her claims like any accusation, as matter to be investigated and either confirmed or disproved. The link between the two scenes lies in Lorenzo's evident need to maintain secrecy and safety. In this, he's just like Shakespeare's Richard III and Macbeth. Quote unquote, to be thus is nothing, the latter tells Lady Macbeth. Quote unquote, but to be safely thus. Richard puts the question as well as anyone ever has when he asks his sidekick Buckingham, quote unquote, but shall we wear these glories for a day, or shall they last and we rejoice in them? Act 4, Scene 2. Lorenzo reflects, quote unquote, I'll trust myself, myself shall be my friend, for die they shall, slaves are ordained to no other end. Lines 118 through 119. Lorenzo is trying to play the puppet master in the Spanish court, and no doubt hopes to secure his own position by strategically favoring and disfavoring others. In the end, though, we know that Lorenzo's efforts will be no more successful than those of Velupo. In Christian tragedy, we are always going to find at least some hint of providence lurking among the play's assumptions. The Spanish Tragedy, the play that started the Elizabethan revenge craze, is no exception. Lorenzo is doomed, just as Velupo is. The notion that underwrites the connection between these two men and their vain, prideful hopes for security is something like, "The wisdom of men is foolishness to God," which idea is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 20 through 31. See in particular verse 20, quote unquote, "Hath not God made the wisdom of this world foolishness?" Geneva Bible. Lorenzo's words merit close attention because they show him to be a thorough rascal. He's willing to sacrifice his lower-level accomplices without conscience or remorse. He says as much. At base, Lorenzo is doing the king's bidding in paving the way for Balthasar to marry Belimperia. But this Machiavel prefers to keep his scheming a secret, at least for now. Now, Pedringano or never, play the man. Belimperia's treacherous servant lies in wait to kill Cerberine at Lorenzo's bidding. But when he does the deed, watchmen are there to arrest him. In Act 3, Scene 3, it's Pedringano's turn in the barrel. He shows up at the appointed time and place, ready to shoot Cerberine with a pistol he's bought for that purpose, and thus eliminate one of the most expendable conspirators. Quote unquote, "Now, Pedringano, or never, play the man." Thus, he bucks himself up to play the role assigned to him. Line 29. No sooner does Pedringano finish off Cerberine than a couple of watchmen just happen to arrive at the scene to arrest him and haul him off to be arraigned by Hieronimo, who is, after all, Spain's chief lawman. How naive of him not to realize that there's no honor among murderers. Some critics have noted that Pedringano resembles the place name Pedrignano in Italy, which would make the man quite an outsider, and so not very hip to the ways of the Spanish court. That's plausible given the bad moves Pedringano keeps making and will make right up to the moment of his death. He believes Lorenzo will protect him. "I set the trap, he breaks the worthless twigs." Lorenzo delights in using the dupe Balthasar to hasten the condemnation of Pedringano. In Act 3, Scene 4, Lorenzo sends Balthasar off to Hieronimo as a proxy demanding the death of Pedringano. Lorenzo's aim to be a puppet master and supreme Machiavel is evident in this scene. He's very pleased with the way he's able to wind others up and set them going to accomplish his objectives without his having to be connected to the necessary deeds. There's also a kind of cruel excess about Lorenzo's words and actions. It isn't enough just to have Pedringano eliminated. No, he has to go to the scaffold in the flush of his arrogance, thinking himself invulnerable. After all, the boy that Lorenzo sends to court has a little box with Pedringano's pardon, supposedly ensconced within it. What could possibly go wrong? Mock on, here's thy warrant. The boy whom Lorenzo sends to Hieronimo's court session for Pedringano muses about the role he has been chosen to play in ensuring his fellow servant's death. In Act 3, Scene 5, the boy whom Lorenzo has sent to court with the empty box that will be Pedringano's death reflects on his own part in this spectacle. He intuits what a corrupt society he's living in and calls what he's been told to carry out an odd jest. That's an odd way of putting it. But here in the Spanish court, it seems appropriate. The upshot of the boy's reflections is that the jig is up for Pedringano. And while he finds the man's fate sad, there's no point getting himself hanged for his part in it. The whole affair is characteristic of Lorenzo's gruesome sense of humor. The boy will stand at the side and point meaningfully at the box, as if to say, quote unquote, "Mock on, here's thy warrant," while himself bearing the complicit certainty that there's nothing inside the box. Line 14. "Only I, to all men, just must be." With Hieronimo presiding, Pedringano goes to his death, flush with a false feeling of invulnerability. In Act 3, Scene 6, Hieronimo unwittingly presides over Lorenzo's macabre little piece of theater, lamenting to himself the larger cause of his own grief and psychological strain. Quote unquote, "I to all men just must be, and neither gods nor men be just to me." Lines 9 through 10. The execution plays out, tidied up by legal proceduralism and ceremony, but just as ugly for that. Pedringano goes to his death, his sins upon his hubristic pate. Where's Saul Goodman when you need him? Where shall I run to breathe abroad my woes? An increasingly distressed Hieronimo laments his inability to get justice for Horatio, but says he'll go to the king's court and demand it. In Act 3, Scene 7, Hieronimo in soliloquy again alerts us to his constantly intensifying spiritual and mental distress. Quote unquote, "Where shall I run to breathe abroad my woes?" he asks in anguish, line 1. He pictures his unrest pervading the very elements around him and sees, quote unquote, "justice and revenge coexisting in the stellar regions where no mortal can go. They are, quote unquote, countermured with walls of diamond and remain unavailable to him." Line 16. It's interesting that Hieronimo places justice right alongside revenge, but he probably means by this what we mean when we refer to retributive justice, strict punishment of offenders. Pedringano's letter to Lorenzo did him no good, since he was hanged before he thought it necessary to make it known to the court, thanks to that non-existent pardon, of course. But it's actually this letter that finally convinces Hieronimo of the truth of Bellimperia's earlier letter, accusing Lorenzo and Balthazar of murdering Horatio. He has the certainty he sought, and now will go to the king, he says, and plead for justice. He will, quote unquote, "cry aloud for justice through the court," line 70. If they won't listen, he'll wear them out with ceaseless threats. There's no medicine left for my disease. Isabella is rapidly losing her mind over Horatio's unavenged murder. In Act 3, Scene 8, Hieronimo's wife Isabella is by now on the cusp of madness, or perhaps she is already in that state. She had called upon the heavens again and again for justice for their son, to no avail. Now she has reached the end of her wits and finds further life untenable. Isabella says, quote unquote, "No, there's no medicine left for my disease. Nothing," she means, "can cure her shattered heart or bring Horatio back to life." Line 4. She dashes off with a vision of Horatio backed up by, quote unquote, "fiery cherubins in the heavens," line 18. Force per force, I must constrain myself to patience. Bellimperia recognizes that for now, at least, she is trapped by Lorenzo. In Act 3, Scene 9, Bellimperia, still kept in hiding by Lorenzo, has given up on her call to Hieronimo to provide justice. She is baffled. Now her last resort, or so she thinks, is that Christian virtue, patience. But soon, very soon, opportunity will come her way. My gentle sister will I now enlarge. Lorenzo sets Bellimperia free. In Act 3, Scene 10, Lorenzo tries to spin a yarn to justify what happened in the garden on the fateful night when Horatio was killed. He claims that he acted to protect Bellimperia's gender-based and class-based honor, but she doesn't buy that story for a minute. She was there, after all. But the main thing is that Lorenzo now sets Bellimperia free because their father, the Duke of Castile, has been asking where she is. A darksome place and dangerous to pass. Hieronimo strangely advises two Portuguese gentlemen who come to find Lorenzo. In Act 3, Scene 11, two Portuguese gentlemen come in search of Lorenzo, whom they say they hope to find in his father, the Duke of Castile's house. But Hieronimo offers them an allegorical vision of the young men, worthy of Dante or Hieronymus Bosch. He sends them on a trip through, quote-unquote, a darksome place and dangerous to pass, until finally they will come, he says, to, quote-unquote, Lorenzo, bathing him in boiling lead and blood of innocence. Lines 28 through 29. Both gentlemen think Hieronymo must be mad, but that's arguable, just as it is later on in Shakespeare's Hamlet, where the prince maintains an eerily calculated, quote-unquote, antic disposition through much of the play. Earlier, Hieronymo had showed the strain of being checked in the expression of his deep desire for justice and retribution against his son's killers. Now it seems that he has discovered a kind of expressive vehicle that we can identify as visionary justice, or perhaps even poetic justice. In keeping with the philosophical bent of Elizabethan revenge tragedy, it makes sense that this kind of literary allegorical representation should prove valuable to Hieronymo as he tries to hold himself together and do justice to his son. This is the love that fathers bear their sons. Hieronymo goes to the Spanish court to demand justice, but his eccentric conduct only leads the king to believe, at Lorenzo's urging, that the man is mad. In Act 3, Scene 12, Hieronymo, again expressing himself in a poetical, allegorical mode, meditates on the relative merits of suicide or violence directed at others, but decides rationally that if he should make away with himself, his revenge quest for Horatio would remain uncompleted. When he greets the king, Hieronymo takes to calling for justice in a way that implies he believes they all know what happened to Horatio. At one point, he blurts out, "Needs must he go that the devils drive," line 82. However, the king and the Duke of Castile seem sincerely ignorant of Horatio's death. The king thinks his good officer, Hieronymo, is out of his mind and resolves to give him some time off to mend. Extrapolating from Lorenzo's advice, the king says, quote-unquote, "This is the love that fathers bear their sons," and arranges to give Hieronymo the ransom money that is coming to Horatio, line 91. Meanwhile, the Portuguese ambassador brings news that the viceroy will gladly accept a marriage between Belimperia and his son, Balthazar. "Nor aught avails it me to menace them." Hieronymo realizes that if he means to get revenge for Horatio, he must lie low and play the simpleton, biding his time until it's opportune to strike. In Act 3, Scene 13, Hieronymo lays out his rationale for the strategy he will employ against Lorenzo and Balthazar. He clearly is not, quote-unquote, mad again. But he will play ignorant so as to keep them thinking they're safe when most they are in peril. The term ignorance here means something like simple-mindedness. Line 34. Moreover, Hieronymo's phrase from Seneca lays bare the point made earlier about the bad character's obsession with security. Per scelus semper tutum est sceleribus iter. Translated, that's, the safe way for crimes is through more crimes. The nobility enjoy superior force, so it would make no sense to assault them frontally. Hieronymo is learning to think like a man stalking high-status human quarry. Quote-unquote, "Nor aught avails it me," he says, quote-unquote, "to menace them," line 36. Hieronymo puts this strategy into action when some citizens come to ask for his help in a professional capacity. He lets them down with his antic disposition, but the case of the old man, the Senex, seems to push him over the edge for a time. The old man seeks redress for his murdered son. At first, Hieronymo confuses him with constant, possibly deranged references to Horatio. But then it sinks in that the man is a kindred spirit, and together they go inside to seek out Isabella. Before doing so, Hieronymo, like Hamlet upon viewing Fortinbras's men going to fight, quote-unquote, for an eggshell in Poland, takes the Senex as a spur to his revenge. The world is suspicious, and men may think what we imagine not. Hieronimo eagerly engages in a false reconciliation scene with Lorenzo. In Act 3, Scene 14, Hieronimo keeps calm when the Duke of Castile airs the rumors that his son Lorenzo has been dishonestly preventing Hieronimo from advancing his suit for justice to the King of Spain. What follows is a scene of false reconciliation, and it must happen if Hieronimo is to prepare the way to his revenge. Quote unquote, "Men may think what we imagine not," he says to the Duke of Castile. Lines 161 through 162. The marriage between Belle Imperia and Balthazar is set to go forward. The New Mermaid's editors point out that at the scene's end, Hieronimo speaks Italian, signaling that he inhabits Lorenzo's cherished Machiavel mode or status. Two can play that game, as the saying goes. Or in Italian, anch'io so giocare allo stesso gioco. Nor dies revenge, although he sleep a while. Revenge again temporizes with Don Andrea's ghost, explaining to him a macabre vision of the upcoming marriage between Balthazar and Belle Imperia. In Act 3, Scene 15, revenge, following upon Hieronimo's wise strategy of feigning madness and simplicity, is catching up on his sleep, but that sleep is interrupted by Don Andrea's ghost. As usual, Andrea doesn't fully understand the action that's unfolding before his eyes. He thinks Hieronimo really has reconciled with Lorenzo, but as revenge explains, that isn't what's happening. A mask is performed, apparently on order of revenge, and the explanation he offers of the mask's action proves satisfactory to Don Andrea. This marriage will result in the death and destruction he pines to see. As revenge explains, quote unquote, "Nor dies revenge, although he sleep a while." Line 23. Sometimes a good revenge action needs to cure a bit before it's ready. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Friday, June 13th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. Quotations are from the 2009 New Mermaid's third edition of Kidd's The Spanish Tragedy.